From national news in D.C. to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol, this is your Capitol Connection. And now, bringing the Capitol to you, here's your host, Nate Groz.
And welcome to the program, Nebraska Family Alliance's weekly radio show, connecting you to the Capitol and covering all things family, freedom, and life. We have reached the one-month mark from the Supreme Court taking on one of the biggest, if not the most significant, religious freedom case of our lifetime. This is the case of Jack Phillips, the Christian cake baker from Colorado, who has been sued and is no longer creating any wedding cakes because he declined to participate in a same-sex wedding. Jack Phillips so far has lost every step of the way in the legal process, and he has reached the final turning point where the United States Supreme Court will not only seal his fate, but the fate of not only all people of faith, but all Americans and their right to live and work according to their beliefs and not be forced by the government to promote speech or participate in events they disagree with without being punished by the government. This is an extremely highly anticipated case that has major implications that will be felt all across the country. And the ACLU, who is representing the other side, suing the Christian cake baker, has come out and said that there is no free speech defense in this case. This is wrong. Absolutely wrong. But I don't want you to just take my word for it. I'm pleased to have joined me on the show today to talk about this case a good friend and attorney and director of public policy for Liberty Counsel, Jonathan Alexander. Jonathan, it's great to have you back on the show again.
Thank you, Nate. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
And Jonathan, we were privileged to have you in Nebraska earlier this year, actually. You came down and and helped us work in the Nebraska legislature in our opposition to a dangerous bill that would infringe on religious freedom by creating a special protected class for sexual orientation and gender identity. And I hope that our legislature didn't treat you too poorly and that we'll be able to get you back in the state of Nebraska.
I enjoy being around Cornhuskers. It's difficult anytime a state legislature considers, as you mentioned, such a radical bill. But certainly the reception from Nebraska in general is always great, and I look forward to coming back soon. I think early next year will be the next time I'll be in Omaha.
We're excited to hear that. And Jonathan, I think when you testified in front of the Nebraska legislature, the message, part of the message, what you shared was that, you know, what we're seeing today from some activists on the left is they make this comparison between the LGBT community and the civil rights movement. And you say that that's not the case. Why is that?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. You hear that often. There's a comparison that individuals with a special interest of conforming society to accept and promote the LGBT agenda. Anytime they're sort of called out on the merits of their advocacy, they say, well, hey, we're the same as African-Americans that suffered through slavery and through the Jim Crow South, and saying that if you deny the special interests of our advocacy, you're tantamount to being a racist that promoted slavery and promoted the Jim Crow South. And it's a completely false narrative. There is no comparison between the experience of African Americans from slavery through the Jim Crow era, even into today. There's no comparison between that and one who chooses to act out on their sexual orientation or their gender identity, and then use the state as a sword to force reasonable individuals to agree with them, even if those persons disagree based on their religious freedom.
Right, and one of those Americans is Jack Phillips, the Christian cake artist from Colorado who has been sued under a similar law to the one you helped us stop here in Nebraska, and his case is now all the way before the United States Supreme Court. And Jack Phillips so far has lost every step of the way fighting for his First Amendment freedoms. And we're going to hear this case coming up in a few weeks in December. And just very recently, Jonathan, you were a part of a new movement called We Got Your Back, yeah. Jack. And you spoke at a press conference right in front of the United States Supreme Court. What is this about, and yeah. why do you have Jack's back?
You know, we want to make it clear that the civil rights of the 1960s, the civil rights that have been, you know, 100 years in the making to treat African Americans as equal citizens, can't be co-opted and considered co-equal to these new laws that effectively force individuals to suppress their religious views when they enter into the public square. You know, the civil rights of the 60s were a fight to gain equal access for African Americans to simple, basic human necessities like hotels and restaurants and shelters. They were put in place to facilitate the very civil rights marches to allow African Americans to stop on the highway if they needed a place to eat or a place to sleep. That's the original intent of public accommodation laws. But in Jack's case, as you mentioned, Colorado has expanded this definition of public accommodations, and now it's making it the source of discrimination instead of a remedy. It's criminalizing individuals that, because of their religious liberty, because of their religious beliefs, can't participate in same-sex marriages, can't perform creative content in order to promote these same-sex unions. Now these public accommodation laws are being put in place to force these individuals to participate.
Right. And so listeners can visit WeGotYourBackJack.com for more information on this. And they'll see you on a little video there, Jonathan. Yeah. And this is really about African-American faith leaders speaking out in support of the Christian artist, in this case, Jack Phillips, who's at the center of this case. Right. But it, really, this is about far much more than just one baker. Is that right, Jonathan?
Yeah, I mean, sadly, you see this trend all across the country. You know, Bernal Stutzman in Washington State, Chief Calvin Cochran in Atlanta. Christians, people of religious convictions all across the country that have the right to participate in the public square and also have the clear right to believe as they do in the public square are now being forced by the state to adopt this new standard, making same-sex marriage equal to an idea that should be celebrated and promoted. And if individuals, because of their religious beliefs, decide not to promote it, they're being ostracized and even facing criminal and civil penalties, as you see in these many cases. So it's a sad trend that we're seeing across the country, as this, you know, the LGBT special interest groups are really using the state to force individual business owners to co-opt a message that agrees with what the state wants them to say. It's a far cry from what our society is based on, this idea of religious liberty and the First Amendment giving an individual a right to speak and believe a certain way and also go into the public square and act on those beliefs. It's a far cry from that original intent.
And so you just brought up free speech, and just last week, the ACLU, who is fighting on the opposite side of this and are the ones representing those who are suing the Jack Phillips and the Bernal Stutzmans, who have politely declined to directly participate in a same-sex wedding ceremony, they said that there is no free speech defense for the Christian baker. Why are they wrong?
Well, they're wrong on several fronts. In the creative profession, the art and commitment that goes to making everything from T-shirts to videos to writing speeches takes all of a person's commitment and their convictions. And so you have businesses or individuals that have creative talent go out into the public square and are able to join with messages that they agree with and make products promoting those messages. But now their speech, as it were, through their creative art is being hijacked or co-opted by the state, and they're being forced to create and use their free speech to promote messages that they disagree with. And that cuts fundamentally against the First Amendment principles of free speech and the ability to speak, to associate with, to believe a certain way, and to express content that reflects those beliefs.
Right. And so what I'm hearing you say, Jonathan, is that basically all we're asking is that tolerance be a two-way street. You're not trying to take anything or any rights away from anyone. You're trying to make sure that everyone, whether they are Christian or not, can live and work according to their beliefs and not be forced to promote messages that they disagree with. And that seems like something that is a pretty universally shared principle, at least in America, that we don't force everyone to agree. Have you found it that you're able to talk to people who maybe disagree with you on the issue of marriage but are in support of Jack Phillips?
Absolutely. I mean, you're seeing that. Individuals that understand our ability to disagree in society, as you mentioned, can get that you don't want to hijack or co-opt a business owner's speech or their production and you know, use the state as a force of law to require them to participate in things that they disagree with. I mean, you can think of an example of, you know, an African-American business owner should never be forced to make a cake that celebrates a KKK rally, or, you know, make advertisement that, you know, would promote a white supremacist rally. We'd never hold that standard against an individual if it directly conflicts with who they are and their expressed belief. Certainly a two-way street. A Democrat speechwriter should never have to be forced to write a speech for the president, use their creative content in order to promote a message that they disagree with. But in this instance, you see, you know, these public accommodation laws that were used for a completely different intent now being flipped and turned on its head to force individuals to participate and to promote speech that they disagree with or that they do not wish to promote. And they have the rights to not be forced by the government to participate in things that conflict with their conscience.
It sounds like this really isn't so much about Christians versus, you know, atheists or the LGBT movement, right, but it's really government versus private citizen.
Right. It certainly goes deeper than what's on its face. As you mentioned before, this case, we're basically just scratching the surface of the implications of the state being able to say that your creative profession, your talents, your, you know, skills as a creative professional only be exercised if you agree to say the things or create the things that the state wants you to create. And this free society has never adopted such a principle. We see its misapplication in Jack Phillips' case, and we can certainly see its end, that this will result in the government essentially hijacking private business owners and forcing them to participate in messages that they disagree with.
Right. It just sounds completely contrary to the Constitution, the First Amendment, and doesn't sound like, you know, anything that the founders had in mind when they wrote the First Amendment, that people could just have their free exercise of religion and free speech rights taken away so easily by the government. And Jonathan, so you are an attorney, you work on defending religious freedom, and you're out in Washington, D.C., so I know we're still several weeks away from this case, but as someone who's analyzing this, you know, what kind of ruling are you expecting we might see from the Supreme Court?
You hope that the Supreme Court will do the right thing. You hope that they will interpret the law that's in front of them. You hope that they'll look at the original intent of these public accommodation laws and see that they were meant to be a shield to protect individuals, give them access to basic human necessities, but that these public accommodation laws were never intended to be used as a force, you know, force of law to force a business owner to co-opt a message that the state prefers. I mean, the Supreme Court doesn't have to do any pencil twisting or anything. They don't have to search very far. The document is in front of them, the Constitution ought to give them the standard on how to rule to this case, and we hope that they do the right thing.
Jonathan, you've really emerged as sort of a leading voice for defending religious freedom and speaking out against some of the rhetoric that we hear from the other side about likening traditional marriage supporters to racists and people who discriminate. Right. And recently you moderated a panel at the Heritage Foundation out in Washington, D.C. with some other very prominent attorneys. There was Ryan Anderson and several Christians that you've talked about who have been sued or fired, right, because of their beliefs about marriage. And this panel focused on why traditional marriage supporters should not be compared to racists. What was this panel about?
Well, you mentioned one of the folks that you mentioned, Ryan Anderson, has written the published several articles that I recommend that speaks of the original intent of these public accommodation laws and say that they were to remedy a bigoted society, a bigoted Jim Crow society that sought to treat African Americans as second-class citizens. That's the original intent, based on immutable characteristics, something that can't change. One's skin color is not a choice or a decision one's make; it's how they are born. And so, even the court has said that public accommodation laws are reasonable responses to a group suffering from consistent discrimination. But we contrasted that on the panels to the often stated phrase that, well, gay marriage is essentially the new black. It's essentially the same identity or rooted in the same consistency that ought to merit protection from the state in a manner that hasn't been evidenced. We don't have this great body of legal evidence describing the disparate treatment whole cloth of the LGBT interest groups, such as was the same suffered by African Americans. We don't have that evidence there. In addition to that, the law isn't what's there to remedy if there were such mistreatments there. Basic market forces is a good way to allow individuals to participate with their money in the marketplace and then support messages that they agree with, or choose to not support messages that they disagree with.
So, Jonathan, as an African American, do you take offense to those types of comparisons?
I mean, you can imagine how much offense I take to that. Born, like I said, not with a choice to be born black. Certainly an identity that is a gift from God. The distinct way that God creates his children is an absolute blessing. And so from a theological perspective, from a cultural perspective, it is a high offense to me for individuals to compare the two.
And Jonathan, so, what kind of reaction do you get from people who, I'm not into identity politics, but I think people probably when they first see you, they probably assume that you are liberal or you vote Democrat, and then you sit down and give your testimony and really just blow a lot of people away. What kind of reactions do you get when you share this message about why comparing some of these pro-LGBT measures to the civil rights era and the plights of African Americans are just completely dishonest?
Well, I'll get a finger usually pointed in my face, and an interviewer or even county commissioners or state legislatures will ask, or I guess sort of accuse and say, how can you as a black person deny individuals the same equal rights that you were denied your entire life? And in effect, what they're saying is, how can you as a black person have a moral opposition to this idea of same-sex marriage? How can you as a black person so hold on to your religious views that you can't participate in a same-sex union or can't promote a same-sex marriage? It's essentially saying, how can you, as a black person, have a view and can consider something sin or immoral? And if you peel that back, that is the height of racism, to say that an African-American, a black man, can only have one particular view on an issue, regardless of what he believes scripture says, regardless of what I believe God has clearly ordained through nature, that me as an African American can only have one view, and it ought to be the view of promoting LGBT. And in the case in Colorado, it ought to be a view that the state is the preferred message. That is the height of racism.
Jonathan, you've traveled across the country. You've been involved with national media, writing articles, working on these big issues, defending religious freedom, traditional marriage, the sanctity of life, and family values. And so I just wanted to ask you, on a personal note, what led you to really be where you're at today, where you are choosing to take on some of the most difficult and controversial issues out there?
I grew up in Massachusetts, about 40 minutes from Plymouth Rock. And, Plymouth Rock is a physical reminder of the origins of our country. men and women coming from England in order to come through New England in order to establish what would be a free society where they could worship God according to the dictates of their conscience, according to what they understood the scriptures were telling them how to worship God, and not being forced by the state, then the Church of England, to buy into a particular theological view. So I had that physical reminder 40 minutes away from my home. I also grew up in a church where my father was a pastor, my grandfather was a pastor, and I understood that if these men continue to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, and it would, in one way or another, conflict with the state, that they would, potentially need legal representation or defense if they ever were to continue preaching and that came into conflict with what the state required. And so I saw those twin principles, understanding the religious values that our country was based on, and also how it would, apply even to my own home, and realize that the best way to continue to promote religious liberty and also defend pastors, teachers, and private citizens, defend their ability to believe these things and practice it in the public place, would be to go into the law and use that as a tool to preserve this idea of religious liberty.
Well, that's a beautiful testimony, Jonathan. I think there are clearly many things that you could have chosen to do for a career with your law degree and your communication skills and intelligence, but you've chosen to honor God and country and make a career defending life and liberty. And I know that's already been of huge value to us here in Nebraska. What do you want to see moving forward with the efforts to defend our First Amendment freedoms here in the United States? How do we keep moving this message forward that we're not asking for anything not guaranteed to us by the Constitution, and that religious freedom is a good thing for everyone?
The Bill of Rights weren't giving any sort of rights. They weren't saying that here's a list of all the things that a citizen can participate in. Rather, the Bill of Rights were saying this is a place that government has no business touching, that the state has no authority over. They cannot limit a citizen's right in this area. And chief among those were religious liberty. As best as we can remind government that their role is not to limit an individual's right to practice, as best as we can put that through the legislature, remind legislatures through different bills, remind through different measures that can come down through the executive. And as often as our judges are faced with cases that bring us to the front, bring this issue forward, as often as they can rule in favor of promoting and recognizing as private citizens' right to believe a certain way and to practice that in the public square, I think we'd be on the right track. And it's not a new argument. It's not anything that's novel. I mean, this was the very basis of our country, but we need to take more measures in order to reassert that.
Well said. Jonathan Alexander, Director of Public Policy for Liberty Council. Jonathan, it's great to have you on this show again. I appreciate your time and all the work you're doing out in Washington, D.C.
Thank you so much, Nate. It's a pleasure always talking to you.
For more information on how you can help protect religious freedom here in Nebraska, you can visit NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. Nebraska Family Alliance is the longest-standing pro-family organization in the state, and your voice at the state capitol for family, freedom, and life. If you would like to help support NFA in their mission to advance family, freedom, and life by influencing policy, mobilizing prayer, and empowering people, take a moment to like NFA on Facebook, sign up to receive emails and alerts at NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org, and consider becoming a monthly partner. NFA is 100% donor-funded, and your partnership is essential to building an enduring cultural transformation in Nebraska. Your gift will help marriages and families thrive, ensure religious freedom is celebrated, and that life is cherished and protected. I'm your host, Nate Graz, hoping you'll join us next week. Be sure to subscribe to Capital Connection for free to stay up to date on the issues you care about most. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.